And welcome back to MTG Eternities. I'm your host, Carl. Now, we do have a bit to go over this week. First and foremost, I do want to discuss big topic for this week, which is FNM as a whole. So I'm sure everyone by now has seen either the Monosaurus' video on FNM changes or Tulare Community College's video on FNM changes, those being the two biggest MTG channels, of course. But if you haven't, quickly summarize it for you. Magic the Gathering is deciding to change FNM in a major way. Instead of getting promos as we normally have been getting used to, which over the years, some of the more standout ones being Path to Exile, Sierra Visions, Fatal Push is coming up, and a few others. Instead of those actually sticking with the theme or instead of making FNM promos better, what Wizards of the Coast has decided to do is end FNM promos as we know them and instead change it to double-sided tokens. I guess from what they've seen, they seem to want to put less focus on FNM and more focus on the Saturday Night Showdown. I don't know what marketing decision guy made this overall. It's a horrible decision in my opinion. I think the marketing guy should probably be fired. I think they're going to see a huge effect in the long run of lack of attendance for Friday Night Magic. From what it seems, and I think it was the professor who said it, they seem to be making Friday Night Magic more along the lines for casual players, and they're trying to make Saturday Night Showdown for competitive. Well, I don't know about you guys. I seem to see a lot more people, especially in my local community, participating in Friday Night Magic. The several stores I attend, it's either constructed or it's draft for Friday Night Magic. And we do have some casual people there who show up, but for the most part, it's a highly competitive community. There are very few people actually participating in the Saturday Night Showdown. I think I went to one store where that actually occurred, and it seemed to be a super casual event. I don't know why they decided to do it like this. Like I said, I think they want to give casual players something, and that's kind of why they're, again, hinting at what the professor said. It seems that it was their reasoning for why the promos kind of go off again and on again for quality purposes. It's the reason why we have bad promos and then two out of 3 months and then one good promo every 3 months or something like that. I'm not a huge fan of this decision at all. It's super lackluster to me. Oftentimes I have to work Saturday, so I can't participate in Saturday Night Showdowns as often as I can participate in FNM. And FNM to me is a great way to test what's good in standard. It's a great way to get together with everyone after they've had a long day of work at my shop and they could all just sit down and relax. We could all play competitive Magic. But axing FNM as a whole with the promos, I think we'll see a lack of people show up in general for it. My community, as I mentioned before, is not a casual community. We do have EDH players, we do have draft players, we do have standard players, modern players, legacy players, but we don't have a lot of new people coming into our community. It's a very well-established community of highly competitive people. Every now and then we'll get a small group of new people, but it's not like they stick around for FNM. In fact, it's often they'll wait 2-3 months down the line before they'll come back again, before they feel like they're established enough to participate in an event. And that's not from us saying, oh, you can't play this, this is bad. This is them literally buying the deck that day, getting used to something, having 3 months of practice with it, or whatever they feel like at that time, and then coming back and participating in FNM or participating in whatever event it is that they want to participate in. Ultimately, I think what's going to happen is FNM is going to see a lack of attendance. Wizard of the Coast is going to see what's occurring, and maybe they'll reinstate FNM at the start of next year as we know it with promos again. I don't think this token idea is going to go over very well. They already took away core sets once, and now they're putting in core sets a couple years later. I think that's probably what's going to happen with FNM. They're either going to run out of tokens people want, because it's going to be standard tokens. They're not going to be like, oh, we're going to print Merit Liege, a $20, $30 token in Friday Night Magic event just to get people out there. They're not going to do that. It's going to be zombies. It's going to be dragons. It's going to be like some random merfolk or whatever we have in Ixalan. It's going to be a dragon token, a pirate token, gold token, or whatever. But it's not going to be something that's desirable to competitive players. And it's not like competitive players, at least in my area, do Saturday night showdowns. It's one of those things where, okay, I took first place, I'm going to get three packs or whatever, the Saturday night showdown packs. What's in here? It's just a mix of random cards from the latest sets for standard. And I think they're doing promos for promo lands, which, cool, promo lands. But there's only so much they can do with the Saturday night showdown packs, in my opinion. It's free three cards, cool, but it's a three free random cards that I might not even need nor care for. So it's either going to be trade fodder, or it's going to be something I give to somebody else because I don't need any of this stuff. A few times I've done Saturday night showdowns, I have yet to see any cards worth value. I have yet to see any cards even worth putting in a trade binder. And it's just one of those odd hodgepodge things that I think Wizards is trying to do, trying to make a separation of casual and competitive, which I understand they want to get more entry people in the way, but I think they're doing a very large disrespect to the community as a whole by getting rid of desirable promos. It's difficult to go on with this idea because I fully agree with Wedge. I do fully agree with the professor on this idea. We're going to see a drop in attendance in FNM. It's going to go, I think, honestly, it's going to put pressure on the store to put up more of a prize pool, or it's going to put pressure on the community as a whole whether or not to try to make Saturday Night Showdown the thing. Because let's face it, we all play Magic, but we also all have regular lives. And if we're not working Saturday, 9 times out of 10, I'm willing to bet we all have a significant other, and we have to entertain that significant other. So if our Friday was our Magic day, Saturday, we probably can't attend Saturday Night Showdown because we're either working, we have a significant other that needs to have their allocated Magic away time. We all have pets, we all have other responsibilities. And granted, Friday was kind of a push for a lot of things like that, but it's still one of those things where it had its place, and I don't think it was that big of an inconvenience. Maybe they want to put more focus on Saturday Night Showdowns, and this is their way of doing it and to push it. But I like I said, I don't think it's going to go over well. If you haven't had a chance, again, please watch the Monosaurus' video on this. Please watch Tulare Community College's video on this. I do think they're both really insightful, and I honestly think they both hit the nail on the head. There's not much I can add to it beyond what they've already said. I do hope you take me up on that recommendation. I think if we raise enough awareness, Wizards might eventually change their mind. Hopefully, it's not going to take more than 6 months to go back to the old style. Double-sided promos are cool and all, but one, it's a hassle. You have to get clear sleeves for both. Two, you have to use a deck that uses the promo, or hopefully you have find somebody that has a use for the promo. And it's the same problem with the double-sided zombie tokens, the double-sided angel demon tokens, the double-sided Thopter servo tokens. I honestly can't say I know anyone immediately using any of those things except the foil double-sided zombie tokens. I do know a few people in my local area using that. But the other two tokens, they fell out of favoritism. So I'm going to go ahead and move on. I wanted to wait and do this podcast after the first major standard tournament took place and see what kind of field was established. And the Star City game open at Cincinnati did establish quite a variety of field. I think there were quite a few decks that showed up within the top 16. I think there were 12 different decks, depending. I'm going to go ahead and go over the top 8. To some extent, I'm going to name the cards that stood out in the deck, the new cards from our Devastation that made a difference in each deck, and one whole new deck completely that caught me by surprise, honestly. We're going to go over that as well. So the first deck I want to talk about is a four-color control deck that topped the SCG Open. You can call it Jeskai Black, or you can call it four-color control, blue, black, red, white. It's all the same thing. We're looking at the standard control colors. So some of the standout cards to me from Umanket and Hour of Devastation, at least that made a big difference in this four-color control deck, were Abrade, Supreme Will, Nicobolas, Mainboard. All those were Mainboard. Abrade was a 2-of, Supreme Will was a 3-of, Nicobolas was a 1. And these two uncommons I'm finding out share a lot of the top 8. And they're very hard to come by, so I do recommend if you pull them in packs, put them in your trade binder. I think they're pulling at about $1.50 a piece, maybe $1, depending, of course. Abrade, if you're not familiar with it, instant deal 3 damage to target creature or player, or destroy target artifact. So against Mardu matchups, this is amazing. Against creature decks, this is great. And against anything that's playing a Gearhulk right now, this is great. So you can see why Braid's making such a headway in Standard. Supreme Will's almost the same way. Supreme Will's a 3-drop instant counter-target spell unless the controller pays 3. Or you can look at the top 4 cards of your deck, put one into hand, the rest of the bottom of your deck in random order. So if you're playing Gearhulk, you can choose a mode depending on late game if you need the card draw, or you can recounter something. And the same thing goes with Braid as well. They both fit into the same deck. We all kind of expected Nicol Bolas to make a big splash, and for this particular instance, he did make a splash. Granted, it was a one-of in this deck. Most decks, from what I've seen, are running him as a one-of, maybe a two-of, one main, one side. For right now, I think that's just what he's going to have to be until a Grixis deck makes more headway and becomes more dominant in the format. Looking at the sideboard, though, for this deck, we do have one Chandra's Defeat, one Forsake the Worldly, which honestly threw me off, and one Jace's Defeat. Going back to the Forsake the Worldly, 3-drop instant with destroyed target enchantment or artifact, and it also has cycle. So I understand why this card is good. I just didn't expect to see it. I guess I can't really fathom why this made it into their board, but if they needed enchantment destruction, then they found it in this card. Chandra's Defeat makes sense to me. It deals 5 damage to Chandra. It deals 5 damage to Nicol Bolas. It'll kill them pretty quick. And Jace's Defeat, it counters Nicol Bolas, it counters Jace, it counters Nissa, at least the blue-green one. So those as well make sense to me. I didn't expect to see major headway from the defeats, but it looks like the defeat cycle, at least in Standard, is going to stick around until we start to see the Gatewatch being pulled back a ways for a little bit. So I don't think we're going to get any of the main Gatewatch when it comes to Ixalan, so I think the defeat will probably lose popularity upon the release of Ixalan. But I could be wrong. Maybe we'll see Jace and Ixalan for whatever reason. We haven't seen Jace since Innistrad, so it's about time they put the poster boy back up. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully it's like Vraska and just some other unnamed walkers that we haven't seen in a while. Heck, I'd even settle for Garruk if he somehow managed to planeswalk to Ixalan. I think that'd be pretty cool. But if you're a Lorthos, you'd probably find great issue with that statement. This 4-color control deck also didn't run a lot of means control-wise for creatures. So it ran a 3 of Wandering from Royals, it ran a 1 of Linvala, and it ran a 1 of Torrential Gearhulk, which is honestly kind of surprising. Usually for a control deck, I expect to see a 4 of Gearhulk, maybe a 3 of Gearhulk. A 1 of Gearhulk definitely threw me off. But when you look at the rest of the package of this deck, it makes more sense. You start to see that this deck is playing a total of 7 Planeswalkers. It's playing 5 Planeswalkers main, and it's playing 2 Planeswalkers side. So it's playing 2 Tovenbond, 1 Jace Unraveler of Secrets, 1 Nahiri the Harbinger, and 1 Nicol Bolas Godfarer. All that is main. And then the 2 additional Planeswalkers it's playing sideboard are 2 Gideon Ally of Zendikar. So if you're looking at picking up this deck, keep in mind that 1, it's going to be a very expensive deck. 2, a lot of what I just listed off is getting ready to cycle. So Jace Unraveler of Secrets is getting ready to cycle, Nahiri the Harbinger is getting ready to cycle, and Gideon, an ally of Zendikar, all are getting ready to cycle. So don't expect this 4-color Super Friends deck to stick around very long. In fact, unless you already have the cards, it's probably not worth picking up, only to having to get rid of it all in 3 months. It's not going to stick around. It's not a great investment in the long run for anyone who's looking to pick up a control deck. I wouldn't necessarily look towards this deck. Unless you already have a majority of it, like 85% of it, 95%, something around there, you just need to pick up 1 or 2 cards. Then it's not going to be that big of a deal. Granted, Nahiri the Harbinger and Gideon Ally of Zendikar both made their way into Modern, whereas Jace Unraveler of Secrets will not hold his value. He will not make it into Modern. There are better Jaces in Modern than Jace Unraveler of Secrets. He's kind of lackluster, especially for a 5-drop Planeswalker in Modern. Dovenbond, not 100% where he sits just yet, if he'll see play in Modern, or if he's just a Standard card, but he's still going to be in Standard for quite some time, so you can probably pick him up on the cheap still. And Nicol Bolas, of course, is going to be in Standard for quite a long time, and he's still over $20, so if you're hesitant on spending $20, he might not be the right time to pick him up. But if you don't mind spending $20, because God knows he could spike up to $40, $50, it's one of those things where you're going to take the risk. It's the first couple of weeks of our devastation. All cards are in flux right now. We don't have a stable market. So if you think $20 is going to be the cheapest Nicol Bolas is going to come, I say go ahead and pick him up. If you think he's going to lower to $15 or $10, then pick him up then. I don't think, personally, he's going to lower himself down to $10. In fact, I think a Grixis deck is just a short ways away from coming out. And upon coming out, I think Nicol Bolas is going to spike up in price. So keep that in mind, folks. Just keep watch out for that. Because if it does happen, Nicol Bolas will spike up in price from $30, $40 to $50 eventually. I do think he'll be the standard control walker. And if we get a couple more walkers like Dovin Bon or something along the lines with his colors, I think it stands a chance for him to be a very amazing Planeswalker in Standard. Moving on to the next Standard deck that took second place is a Blue-White Monument deck. So a lot of decks right now are coming out of the woodworks that have kind of were held back by Aetherworks Marvel, were held back by Ezekiel Lee Combo, were held back by Emrakul, and I think this is one of them, to an extent, of course. We do see a lot of cards from Amonkhet and from Kaladesh within this particular deck. It's definitely up for debate, but I do like this deck as a whole. So you're looking at 25 lands, 3 Westvale Abbeys, of course. Westvale Abbey's just a great finisher. Creature-wise, it's a lot more creature-heavy than the 4-color control deck. You're looking at 4 Bygone Bishops, 4 Cloud Blazers, 4 Handwire Militia Captain, 4 Selfless Spirit, 4 Spellqueller, and 4 Thraven Inspector. All those creatures, though, aside from Cloud Blazer, are cycling. So again, if you're worried about picking up a deck before it cycles, this is definitely not the deck to pick up. This deck will not make it into Modern. This deck has some Modern cards in it, like Spellqueller and Selfless Spirit. But outside of that, it's going to be hard to introduce any of those other cards into Modern. It's also running 3 Angel of Sanctions sideboard, as well as 2 Nimble Obstructionist sideboard. So Nimble Obstructionist is a card from Hour of Devastation. I'm calling it the Stifle Bird, because effectively that's what it is. You could either cycle and stifle something, or you can cast it. I actually really like this card. It's a shame that I believe the Blue-White Monument deck was the only deck to actually fully utilize Nimble Obstructionist. I kind of wish this card was seeing a little bit more play outside of that deck. Angel of Sanctions, of course, is the O-Ring Angel. 5, you O-ring a non-land permanent, you start beating face with the angel, angel dies, permanent comes back, you can then embalm the angel, bring it back, O-ring it again, and start beating face with the angel again. It's a very good card, I think we'll see a lot of use in Standard for this for time to come. The deck was also using a 3 of Dawn to Dusk. All those cards I mentioned beforehand, outside of Handware Militia and Angel of Sanctions and Nimble Obstructionist, are less than 2 power. So Dawn hits, you wipe the field of everything power 3 or greater. Dusk hits, you return everything from power 2 or less from grave to hand. So very utilizable, especially considering if you have a Nimble Obstructionist in grave, you can just pop it back to hand. It's also utilizing 4 of Ketra's Monuments. Now, Ketra's Monument is great in this deck. It's going to lower the cost of almost all your creatures by 1, and it's going to poop out 1/1 tokens. So it's going to flip that Hamwire Militia a little bit quicker. It's going to fuel Westvale Abbey to eventually flip. I believe this deck is relatively cheap, so if you don't mind almost all these cards rotating in 3 months, then I would suggest picking it up. It does seem like a very fun deck to play. But keep in mind, like I said, all these cards rotate in 3 months, so it's not the best investment in the long run. So moving right along, we do have a 4-color Emerge deck. Emerge is a very good mechanic out of Innistrad. There are a lot of creatures that utilized it, so I'm going to go over some of the creatures within this deck. We see a newcomer to this deck in the form of Champion of Wits. It is a 3-drop, 2-1. When it comes into play, draw cards equal to its power, then discard 2 cards with Eternalize. So you Eternalize this guy for 7, you draw 4 cards, late game you discard 2. So it's a very good draw engine. So the reason why I think this card's seeing a lot of play is you're able to play it, draw cards early, and then you can emerge it using your Elder Deep Fiends. So you get that guy into your grave early, you start attacking with your Elder Deep Fiends, locking down the field, and eventually you're going to emerge this guy, draw more cards, and keep on doing what you need to do, beating down face with Elder Deep Fiends, drawing more cards with Champions of Wit. The cycle keeps on going on and on. But there are quite a few other things you could do with this deck. It's running a 4 of Grim Flare as well. It's running 4 Haunted Dead, it's running a 1 of Ishkanah Graph Widow, and it's running a 4 of Prized Amalgam. Again, we see here that a lot of these cards are going to be cycling in 3 months. So, as I mentioned before, it's not a great deck to invest in. Outside of Champion of Wits, none of those cards that I just named are going to stay in Standard. If you already have the deck, great. If you don't have the deck, I really don't recommend investing in it, but it's up to you. The deck is also running Strategic Planning, which I think is also fueling it. Quite a few reasons. So Strategic Planning is a sorcery. You draw 3 cards, put 1 in hand, put rest in the grave. So you can fuel your Delirium. You can pick and choose what you need for Delirium. So you can discard a creature. You can discard sorceries to help your Ishkanah and Grimflayers get stronger and poop out Spider Token. Outside of that, the only new card that it is playing is in sideboard with Bantu's Last Reckoning. 4-color Emerge is kind of heavy, leaning more towards the black, obviously. It's utilizing old cards like Kozilek's Return, Tireless Tracker, stuff like that. But the whole deck is only going to last 3 months, like I mentioned before. So keep that in mind, folks. It's not an expensive deck to get a hold of. It does have pricey cards like Grimflare and stuff like that within it. But don't plan on using it for that long. Don't get used to using something like this. We are not going to see Delirium come back all of a sudden in Ixalan. It would be incredibly odd if they did Delirium that soon, and they're usually used to turning out keywords pretty quickly. So I don't expect we'll see Delirium back anytime soon. I don't expect we'll see Haunted Dead in Ixalan. I don't expect to see Prized Amalgam or any of that stuff in Ixalan. Keep that in mind with when you're making your deck for Standard. Next in line out of the Star City Top 8 was a Black-Green Energy deck. Black-Green Energy is utilizing a lot of the same cards Black-Green Energy has over Walking Ballista, Servant of the Conduit, Kalidus. Everything's been the same. There hasn't really been any major addition to this deck, with the exception of 2 Dream Stealers main and a Crook of Condemnation. So Dream Stealer is a card we mentioned last week, and I'm also mildly horrified to see it seeing play in Standard, but it is a 3-drop, 1-2 with Menace. Whenever it deals combat damage, that opponent discards cards where X was the amount of damage dealt by Dream Stealer. So initially, their opponent's going to lose 1 card a turn every time they let Dream Stealer go through. But it also has Embalm for 6, so now it becomes a 4-4 with Menace that's effectively going to make your opponent discard their entire hand if it hits. I'm not a huge fan of the card because I don't like cards that are, one, vulnerable to Magma Spray, like, to that extent. A 3-drop 1-2 with Menace doesn't seem very good if I can just go Magma Spray and just exile. 2, I don't like losing my hand because I have a feeling this card, again, will get used on me. I'm going to be incredibly salty when it happens. Overall, I'm not looking forward to playing against the Black-Green Energy decks just for this exact reason. They're going to play Dream Sealer, and I'm not going to have an answer for it in hand. I'm going to be having nothing but, like, negates or something. And this card's going to hit, and it's just going to hurt, unfortunately. Crook of Condemnation, I do think, is a great card to pick up, though, for sideboard purposes. Crook of Condemnation, for lack of a better term, is kind of a worse Relic of Progenitus / Tomod's Crypt. It's a 2-drop, pay 1, tap it, exile target card in the grave. Or you can pay 1, sacrifice it, exile all cards in grave. So it's a very anti-Delirium card. The benefit here, though, is unlike Tomod's Crypt and unlike Relic of Progenitus, Crook of Condemnation actually targets cards in grave specifically, so it can actually get rid of a card you don't want to see again. The scenario I'm going to set up for you is Torrential Gearhulk just got played. Your opponent has to declare the target of what they want to flash back with Torrential Gearhulk. So you go in response to target, activate Crook, exile that card. Now they just have a 5-6 Gearhulk in play. Granted, it's still a 5-6 Gearhulk, but they don't get the flashback that comes with it. Or you can, you know, pay 1, sacrifice the Crook, and just get rid of it, rid of all the graveyards completely. This card is also amazing against zombies, and the fact that it's going to exile the zombies that are going to return from grave, and it's also amazing against Delirium decks and get rid of all the Delirium cards so you don't have to worry about things that make Delirium worse. Like, you don't have to worry about Ishkanah pooping out 3 little spiders along with her 3/5 body, which is actually really nice. The deck has also increased the amount of Planeswalkers it's using slightly. I'm used to seeing Obnixilis slide, but the deck is now playing 2 Obnixilis main, it's playing 2 Liliana main, and it's playing 2 Nissa Voice of Zendikar main. all these planeswalkers are about to cycle, so keep that in mind. A lot of the cards in this deck as a whole are about to cycle. Keep that in mind. It does still have a lot of the base left, so maybe we'll see black-green energy return depending on what we see with Ixalan being released. But considering it's losing all of its walkers, it's probably going to lose a bit of its land base, and it's probably going to lose a few of the creatures like Kalidus and stuff. It's just something that, to me, it's worth investing. If anything, this is the most investable deck I've seen so far, standard-wise, is black-green energy. You're not going to lose a lot from it. Just keep in mind, you will lose a little bit upon rotation. The next deck I wanted to talk about is honestly the strangest name deck I've seen in a while. It's called Kiwi Red. As a whole, I think it has a lot of potential. So you have, in the deck, 15 Mountains, and I never thought I'd be saying this, but you also have a Dune of the Dead, 4 Ramunap Ruins, and 4 Sunscorched Deserts. So in total, the deck has 9 deserts playing in standard. I think that's rather funny. So if you don't know what any of these cards do, Dune of the Dead, when it goes into the grave, it's going to generate a 2-2 zombie. And obviously it has to be on the field when this happens. Ramunap Ruins, you pay 2 colors, 2 red, you sack a desert, and then deal 2 damage to each opponent. And then it plays 4 Sunscorched Earths, which has an ETB that deals 1 damage to a player. It's very red, to say the least, especially when you look at these deserts, but that's the biggest payoff, I think, for the deserts. I don't think the deck is utilizing any cards that run off of deserts like Ramunap Hydra or anything like that. It's just a mono-red slash colorless build. So moving into the creatures, you have 4 On-Crop Crashers, which is a 3-drop 3-2 with haste. You can exert it, and whatever effectively say, you can target a creature and that creature can't block. It's running 4 Earthshatterer Kenra, which when they come to play, another creature can't block, and it has haste, and it's a 2-1. It also has embalm, so it's going to come to play later and redo it again. It's running 2 Eldrazi Obligator, which initially I thought was only a sideboard card, but this card's playing in main. It takes control of target creature for a colorless and a waste. It's playing 4 Falconwrath Gorgers. It's just a value 1-drop, I think, in the deck. It's running 2 Glorybringer. It's also running a Hazoret. It's running Karizef Skyship Raider. I don't know why it's running this 2-drop, but it is. I guess they're just looking for value 2-drops, and Karizef came up. It's running a 2 of Reality Smasher, 4 of Soul Scour Mage, and a 3 of Thought Not Seer. All this stuff mixed in together makes for a rather unique red deck. Again, I still am not quite sure why this person decided to name it Kiwi Red. Maybe kiwis are their favorite bird or favorite just thing to eat. I don't know. But it is a rather fun deck to look at. It's also running 3 Incendiary Flows, 3 Magma Sprays, and 2 Chandra Torch of Defiance. Now, initially just looking at this deck, if I were to make any personal adjustments, I would probably say instead of Incendiary Flow, I'd probably go Parade. The Parade just offers more utility, you can use it at instant speed. Granted, it doesn't exile something, but I really don't care about that. The fact of the matter is, it also gives me the ability to destroy an artifact if I need to. So I don't know if Torrential Gearhulks were a problem for this deck. I don't know if any of the Mardu lists were a problem for this deck. But that's just where I would go. Instead of Incendiary Flow, I would go Parade. Again, just me. But they did decide to do a unique sideboard. So they were running 2 Abrade, 1 more Chandra, Torch of Defiance, 1 more Glorybringer, 2 Hanmar Garrison, and I'm going to get back to that one. It's running 1 more Magma Spray, 1 more Reality Smasher, 2 Sweltering Sun. Again, I thought a bit of an odd choice, and 1 more Thought Not Seer. I really enjoy Hanmar Garrison as a creature. If anything, I would be running that towards the main rather than the sideboard. I don't know necessarily what you'd run over it. Maybe instead of Karizev Skyship Raider, you'd run the Hanmar Garrison. Just seems to make more sense. But if you notice something, the other part of the Hanmar Garrison is missing. The Hanmar Township as a card is not anywhere in his 75. And I know it's a long shot to fuse, but if you're running one part of a fuse card, you might as well run the other part. Even if it's just as a one of. So here's my thought is maybe instead of the Dune of the Dead, you run a Hanmar Township. Or instead of running 15 Mountains, you put a 1 of Hanmar Township main. That might be cutting into your red a little bit more than you want to, but since you have the Ramunap Ruins, which produce red for a pain, then it shouldn't be that hard, because effectively at that point, you're running 29 Mountains. So that leaves Dune of the Dead and Scorched Desert left. and you want those cards for your wastes. So that again leaves you with the 15 mountains. So I think you can effectively cut one of the mountains and not be too far hurt. It gives you a bit more late game outside of just your Reality Smashers and your Glory Bringers and your Chandras. The Handwire Flip also does have haste itself, and it produces more tokens that are 3-2, so it is a bit more. You're not going to see the payoff often, but when you do see the payoff, I think it's going to be worth it. I figure this person was running Sweltering Suns because they didn't want to see a zombie matchup overrun them. I can't figure another reason to run Sweltering Suns outside of that. I don't know necessarily if that was the best of choices, per se, since you're going to end up wiping out your board as well. I think you're going to outspeed the zombie deck, and I think I personally would have gone more towards a Crook of Condemnation, or maybe I would have done more Braids in the side. There's many ways you can do with this. I do think, as a whole, this deck is going to withstand quite a bit. I think this deck might be one to invest in. Yes, you do lose your Eldrazi, and that gives you less reason to play Deserts, but there are other cards you could side in. I do think that we're going to end up seeing a mono-red deck eventually make its way back into Standard. It does depend a lot on what we see in Ixalan, but outside of that, I think this deck does have quite a bit of potential. You also might be able to find ways to put Fiery Temper in this deck. Since you're utilizing Madness anyways with a Hazoret, Fiery Tempers might not be that bad. You're also utilizing Falconwrath Gorger anyways with Hazoret, discarding your cards deal 2 damage and then cast them for whatever their cost is with Falconwrath Gorger. Again, not necessarily sure if that is the best path to go on with this particular deck, but it did get this person well within the top 8, and it is by far my favorite deck out of this whole tournament so far. I just enjoy Kiwi Red. As a whole, it seems like it's going to be pretty good. Also, since we're seeing Pirates in the next set, Karizev might be a card to stock up on considering she is a Pirate. She's cheap right now. I think she's like less than a dollar regular. So if you're willing to make an investment, you might be able to come out ahead on Karizev. Granted, I don't see her hitting that threshold quite yet, but that's what Ixalan is for. We need more Ixalan spoilers. And once that happens, we can judge fairly whether or not Karizev has the guts to make it into another Standard session outside of Kiwi Red, or if it just doesn't have what it takes. Lastly, I want to kind of quickly go over the last 3 decks in Top 8. There weren't any major changes to these decks, or we've kind of gone over them already, but I'm going to quickly touch on them. Mono Black Zombies, at least the lists that made it into Top 8, did not see any major changes. In fact, I'm honestly surprised that a Mono Black Zombies made it as far as it did, considering Hour of Devastation is the new end-all be-all when it comes to board wipes. Humigate is seeing more play and stuff like that. You have cards like Sweltering Suns that's also still in Standard that kind of hurts Mono Black Zombies. So the fact that this list made it with no changes by adding cards from Hour of Devastation is amazing, and I'm kind of awed. Just goes to show you that with practice, within a certain deck, you get to know your matchups and you can make it far. You don't necessarily need to add cards from new sets, so unfortunately, Mono Black Zombies is not going to be around much longer. It's going to be around 3 more months before we lose a good majority of our zombies. And then we are reduced to using the ones from Amonkhet and Hour of Devastation. And we do see a significant power drop, but even though we see a power drop in the zombies, doesn't mean that Mono Black Zombies or Orzhov Zombies can't still exist. In fact, you might be able to even do a Dimir Zombies with the Scarab God and try to utilize that to the best of your ability. I'm honestly surprised that this player didn't actually splash blue and try to fit in the Scarab God just as a 1-of or 2-of late game sort of thing in the sideboard. The Scarab God overall just seems really good, and if you're able to go, I'm going to play the Scarab God next turn, you're going to lose 6 life swing, all my zombies have menace from my lord. I don't see how that doesn't end games. In fact, I honestly think most mono black zombies need to be splashing blue for the Scarab God, or they need to be Orzhov to utilize some of the white zombies. Heck, I'd even settle for an Esper zombie deck right now. I just think that zombies are in such a place that they're able to do that, and they should be doing that. That moves us on to our next deck, and second to last one, which is Timur Energy. Now, again, as before, there wasn't much of a change to this deck in particular. We do see Champion of Wits making an appearance again. We do see a Braid making an appearance. But outside of that, the deck as a whole did not change. There wasn't much added to Timur Energy outside of Champion of Wits and a braid. So that just goes to show you that considering Champion of Wits is, I think, $2 right now, it might be a card to stock up on. And a braid for sure is a card to stock up on. Also, side note, if you're able to participate in Game Day, I believe there is a full art version of a braid, so that might be something worth to pick up. Our full art of braids from Game Day or foil of braids. I think we're going to see a braid in Standard for a long time. We haven't seen a great burn spell like a braid in quite some time, and it's going to be useful for a long time. Again, Gearhulks are going to be a thing in Standard for a long time. We haven't seen what Ixalan has to come yet, but if all the cards hold true, you're going to see cards like gold come in from Ixalan, and gold is targetable with a braid. Granted, it's probably not the best target, but it is a target. Finally, that leads us to the last deck out of this top eight, and it was, again, a blue-white monument deck. I'm not going to go over this particular deck because it was very similar to the other blue-white monument deck. Their two lists are fairly comparable, so I think there's a lot you can pick and choose from. If you're interested in building a blue-white monument deck, this does give you options since there are two. You can look at both the builds and try to decide which build you like better, or maybe even mix the builds a little bit and try to see which one works out better for you in your local meta or in the next big tournament that you're going to. The last thing I want to touch on in this cast, of course, is a surprise to me, and that was the fact that there wasn't a control deck in the way of Grixis or Blue-Red showing up. I don't necessarily know, at least in top 8, if you look into the top 16, there was one Blue-Red deck that showed up, as well as one Grixis deck that showed up. So I don't necessarily know if that means that these decks, even though they made it to the top 16, if they were situated quite right, but the decks are in themselves still viable. They will not see a lot of rotation, especially Grixis. I think the biggest thing that the blue-red deck and the Grixis deck are going to lose are Wandering Fumaroils, unfortunately. But a lot of the cards that we're going to lose were replaced in our Devastation, so that was a bonus. So with any luck, Ixalan's going to give us a little bit more to work with, and hopefully that's going to keep these decks within crossing point, a solid tier 2, solid 1.5. I honestly think that the decks as a whole have the potential to go to tier 1. It's just a matter of finding that right balance. It's definitely a high tier, if not tier 1 deck. I myself am playing an Izzet control list. I am splashing black to an extent to play Nicobolas. I would like to adjust my board, and I need to adjust a little bit more of the main deck before I'm confident in saying this is the deck I want to just play for the next 3 months. This is what I need to do. It's almost there. It's just needing a little bit more tinkering. And I think that's what a lot of the Grixis players, I think that's what a lot of the Izzet players are doing right now, is they're tinkering with their decks just to see what sticks and what doesn't. I think it's only a matter of time before we find the right build. Before Grixis, you'll see it dominating format or taking up 2-3 spots in top 8s. I think that's where we're going to go. It's been a long time coming, folks. But control has not been that great in a long time. Combo's been great for the last 6 months, but they unfortunately keep banning it. Aggro was great before that. I don't think we've had a great control deck since Return to Ravnica with Sphinx's Wrath. We don't have Sphinx's Wrath. We have instead Nicobolas. And I think that's going to be the heavy hitter everyone needs to be watching out for. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast. If you have any ideas of what you want to run in Standard or anything that you guys want to attempt to do in Standard, please be sure to put them in the comments below or tweet at me at MTG Eternities. I definitely want to see what everyone's playing in Standard and how you feel now that unfortunately there isn't any combos in Standard, but instead we have a more aggressive control deck showing up. Instead we have more aggro showing up. Let me know what you think of the state of Standard. Let me know what you think about any of these decks. Let me know if you want to play Kiwi Red. I'm definitely interested in hearing what you guys have to say, especially about the FNM promos. I think that's the hot-button topic, and it's going to be the hot-button topic for quite some time. So now I'll go ahead and leave you guys with saying that all lines of thought are open for all Magic Seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.